Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Please take your seats quickly, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Tennis Weekly with Joel, Kim and Chris on today's Davis Cup special sponsored by DownloadTennis.com.
Tennis Weekly are courtside for Denmark, India.
Team GB and USA win away.
And we sit down for an exclusive with world number 9, Holger Rune.
Chris, today is the 6th of February and we are here for a Davis Cup special at Tennis Weekly HQ. Coming off the back of the Australian Open, we are into Davis Cup qualifying. We've had GB away to Colombia, USA away to Uzbekistan, and we've had lots of other ties as well. France, Hungary, Croatia, Austria, Germany, Switzerland. But of course, the big tie was in the playoff round. Denmark versus India. You were present for it. How did it go?
Well, I was in World Group 1 and it was the stakes couldn't be higher. One of these teams is going to be relegated out of India and Denmark, and it was at home for the Danes. As a Danish resident here, it was the perfect opportunity to go and speak to the teams and get the perspective of how Holger's doing, how he's developing. I think it was a great opportunity for Tennis Weekly to get courtside.
I mean, it was very exciting because we do have coming up in this episode interviews with Holger Rune, Rohan Bopanna, and Tennis Weekly favourite, well, we should say Tennis Weekly favourite, Kim's favourite, Freddie Nielsen of all people, who I believe you had a bit of a laugh and a bit of banter with.
Yeah, I think that was the key objective I had from Kim was to find Freddie. Yes. And I think maybe we hadn't all fully realized, I definitely realized that he was the Danish captain, so it wouldn't be too hard to find him because he'd be playing a very prominent role in the tie. But no, and impressed. We had some very interesting chats, and I think it's interesting to see that he'd quite like to draw the Brits at some point. So that's some fighting talk, and maybe
that would question
Kim's loyalty towards him.
Well, I wonder what Kim thinks of that. We'll have to ask her on our next tour catch-up, which will be coming next week. But yeah, you were there. You're at the tie as part of media. Very special thanks to the Danish Tennis Federation for that. What were your thoughts going into the tie? You know, you, I think, managed to catch up with Holger on press day before the match got underway. How was that experience for you?
Yeah, it was the first time I've been to one of the draw ceremonies, which I think it's a slightly unusual one because they're only drawing, I mean, it's four matches, pretty much five total. And the lineups change almost immediately after that when it comes to seeing who's going to play on that second day. So there's a lot of ceremony around it. There was a lot of press attention there because obviously Holger is a superstar in Denmark. So I think people were slightly confused as to why there was a Brit at the India-Denmark tie. But no, there was a great atmosphere and great excitement because this was the biggest event that Denmark has had for tennis in, I think, three years. And there's not currently an ATP or a WTA event here at the moment. So this was all eyes on Hillerod, where the match was being played. But yeah, it was great. And we got to speak to Holger beforehand, got to ask him some questions about his game. We got to ask him how he's feeling kind of playing for his country and how he's feeling about kind of looking forward to the Olympics in 2024. So I think we can hear some of that now. Okay, so firstly, we're going to say how great is it to be playing in Denmark, having probably not spent that much time here in the last year, and maybe I'm not sure if your off-season was here or you were somewhere else.
I was somewhere else, so it's really good to be back to play in front of the full Danish crowd tomorrow, and I'm super excited. We have a good time on the team, you know, all the guys seems ready, and I'm ready too, so it's going to be hopefully a great match, and I'm super pumped for it.
We were in Stockholm where you won the title, obviously. And one of the key takeouts from that is that we didn't see there were many weaknesses in your game. We're wondering, from your perspective, is there a part of your game you're working on particularly or you think you could improve significantly?
I'm working a lot on my surf to higher the first serve percentage. I think it's very important because, you know, all the guys on the tour, when you put in a good first serve, you have a very good chance to win a point. So that's what I'm working on. And, you know, just all the other things, it's important to try to improve every time you step on the court. And same with the mental and the physical stuff. Try to improve 1% every day.
If you had kind of gone even further in Australia, would you have still kind of made the Davis Cup tie the priority to come back and play? Or was there kind of a change in plans?
I would have come and play as well because it was planned, and I was super pumped and excited to come back home to Denmark and play. And you know, it's going to be great. No matter how good I did in Australia, I was going to play. Yeah.
We had a few questions from our listeners, and one of them was whether kind of the Olympics is a big goal of yours and playing for Denmark there.
It is. I'm super excited for it. It's going to be next year, 2024, in Paris. I always played great in Paris, and I'm excited for it. It's a great event. As a kid, I've been dreaming about it as well, so it's a sooner reality.
In terms of this match being played on indoor hard courts, which surface do you think kind of suits your game best, and which surface do you think you're most likely to have kind of some of your best results on?
I think hard court and clay. Still have to get some more experience on grass, but still feel like my game, the aggressive game style I have, is good for grass and I move well. I just have to practice more on it and get used to it, and I think I can be as good as I'm on hard court and clay.
And then the final question is also from a listener who asked if there was kind of a piece of advice that you were given last year that was really kind of important to kind of changing how your season went, if there's something that particularly stood out to you from advice you've been given.
Not just one, it's a lot. But yeah, I mean, just basically every day you go on court, stay focused, keep your game playing, keep going on the right path, because one day you'll reach as good as you can be.
Just stay focused.
Exactly, stay focused.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thanks, guys.
Good luck.
It's very interesting hearing from Holger Rune there on lots of different aspects. I just want to say it's actually great, I think, to see players of his quality take Davis Cup seriously and play these ties, even though it can feel like it comes at inopportune moments, you know, the jet lag all the way coming over from Australia. But the opportunity to play in front of your home crowd is, you know, is genuinely special. And you know, in these moments, I feel like there's a, you know, there's a great vibe and there's a great atmosphere. Now, talking about, you know, the things that you spoke to him about, you were quick to kind of talk to him specifically about his game and the areas he wants to work on. And I think he mentioned his first serve in particular and how he thinks that's such a crucial you know, weapon that just every tennis player on the ATP tour needs to have at the moment. Did that take you by surprise, or were you a little bit like, it's just a fundamental thing that all aspiring tennis players on the ATP tour need to have in their locker?
Yeah, I wasn't necessarily surprised by the answer. I think when you look at his backhand and you look at his forehand, they're such good weapons. His movement is exceptional. So the serve does make perfect sense to me, unless he was really trying to kind of move up the court a bit more, which doesn't necessarily seem to be his game style. What was interesting about what happened after this conversation is that you could see that he was definitely trying to work on some aspects of his game, almost try things out whilst the stakes were slightly lower, not necessarily in terms of the pressure of playing in front of your home crowd, but the opponent's rankings from India were not particularly high. So I think he was going for his first serve a bit more and also going for a second serve a bit more. So there were more double faults, but I think it was actually the perfect opportunity for him to try some things out on serve. And so kind of after he said this and then looking at how we played, I think it's pretty clear that the serve is his key focus area right now. And I said to him, there aren't really weaknesses in his game. And I think it's just about improving that serve. And then he's already a pretty scary prospect as the only person to beat Djokovic since he returned to the tour. So there's not much to work on, is there?
I mean, he was so unlucky. He was so unlucky, I think, again, in that Rublev match at the Australian Open. Who knows? Yeah, who knows where that could have taken him. And, you know, something that I was surprised by, and I did not know, even as an ardent and passionate tennis fan, I did not realise how important Davis Cup is to the Olympic cycle. You know, we've got Paris coming up. Tennis players, of course, want to represent their country in Paris. And in order to do that, you need to put Davis Cup you know, in your agenda and your calendar year in order to kind of get the entry requirements to play the Olympics?
Yeah, I think you've got to play a number of times prior to, and in the couple of seasons prior to the Olympics taking place. So I think it's something where it's almost a hygiene factor for players to make sure that you are playing. So I think, for example, we've seen Tommy Paul play for the USA, but then Fritz wasn't there, TFO wasn't playing. They have obviously played for them towards the back end of last year, but they will need to play in the finals, for example, to make sure they are able to be kind of selected. It's rare that players wouldn't be selected, but I think that's why we've seen so many top players, such as Tsitsipas, play the final of the AO, and then he's in Greece playing.
No, it's incredible.
Incredible.
I mean, the turnaround is very commendable. I know, obviously, there are various kind of motives, but to do that, to go from that environment to another environment, I know that the big incentive is to play in front of your home crowd, and I think you see, you know, in Denmark, also in Greece, you just don't get that many opportunities at the moment. Arguably, I think, you know, you see these great ties happen, and I think why aren't there more or at least like one ATP level or WTA level event on the tour in that country?
Yeah, and we asked this to another one of the players, August, who played the second singles. And I think they talked about the fact that there were so many of these sort of smaller events in the USA. And I think Bob Parner actually mentioned it, who you'll hear from in a minute, who said about kind of Ben Shelton, who hadn't actually left the USA prior to, you know, having his incredible run in Australia, but he was able to get the ranking up. So I think it's one of those things where having players who are achieving a lot of success is really an opportunity for the infrastructure and for the tennis federation to be able to put on events like the Danish Tennis Federation were able to do, that really ups the profile and potentially could get and kind of set them on the path to getting one of those prestigious WTA or ATP events in the future.
Now, you spoke to him about court surfaces, and he was saying he thinks his best surface is hard court and clay, but you know, he doesn't feel like he's had enough time on the grass yet, though he thinks he can be very, you know, a threat on it. Where do you stand on Holger Rune going into the, you know, the grass court season later in the year? If he's working on his first serve, that's going to obviously help him on a grass court. Do you see grass being maybe a surface he can thrive on in the future?
I mean, there's no reason why he wouldn't be able to, based on the game that he has, especially seeing him play in the doubles. I mean, he had some unbelievable hand skills. So I think he has all the weapons, all the right kind of pieces of his game to do some real damage on grass. I think it's the balance will be about playing, making sure he plays aggressive tennis, because if you do kind of slip into some of those clay court mentalities, I do think that that's where we see some clay courters not necessarily get their best results. But an interesting piece of information, as someone who has been playing tennis in Denmark recently, I think the reason why Holger's so good indoors and then on clay is because that's actually how Danish tennis is set up. So in the spring and the summer, you play on clay, and then you go indoors because the weather's so cold and you play on indoor hard. So I think that's kind of why his best results have come on the indoor hard courts and on clay. So I think it's probably just because he hasn't had that much experience on grass, like he said. So there's no reason why it can't be a great surface for him in the future.
Yeah, and I think, you know, he's got definitely the right, you know, mentality in the approach. And I love his talk about staying focused, and I do genuinely kind of look at him and watch him on TV, and I just think he just loves tennis, and he just consumes it like fans do 24/7. And I think you need that focus when you're competing with, you know, the very best in the world, but also players like Novak Djokovic, Rafael Nadal. Do you think this is a thing that is just common throughout these kind of next generational type players like Holger Rune, where, you know, they've grown up in this era that's just like super competitive, and as a result, they're going to need to be switched on right from the get-go? Or do you feel like this is unique specifically to Holger Rune?
I think he's definitely very, very focused, and he is obsessed with the game. I think the only player that I've kind of seen who's had the similar levels of sort of obsession with the game is Leda Fernandez, who really is a student of the game as well. And we learned a lot about that on her path the US Open final, that she studies matches. She watches matches in her free time, like older matches that have been played in the past. And I think that's definitely something when you've seen some of the players that Holger's now playing, when he's been watching those matches and studying those matches, and he lives and breathes the game, I think it really does help you stay focused because you don't kind of get distracted at things outside of that. And I do think potentially seeing how the next gen, the mid gen, the current gen, I always call it the wrong name, but I think they've been a bit distracted at times by some of the fame and celebrity of things. And I think he's super grounded and super focused. And I think it sets you up in a great place to be able to kind of maximize what you can do on the tennis court.
I mean, just to play devil's advocate here, is there an argument to say you could be too focused? Because I know you just said Leila Fernandez, which I think is very interesting, because when I hear very, very focused, I think on the men's tour, Andrei Rublev, who I think, yeah, he wants it so... I just feel like when I watch him, he wants it so badly. But actually, it sort of controls him and possesses him in a way that doesn't necessarily help his game. So I don't feel like Runa is sort of negatively channels it like maybe I think Rublev sort of does at the moment. But do you think there is an argument to say, like, with being too focused, you just need to still, you know, watch yourself and channel that energy positively?
Well, interestingly, Freddie said after the tie, when it came to selecting who was going to play in the doubles, that even though the Indian team was more experienced, he couldn't even suggest the idea. Like, the idea that they might be the underdogs in that would be alien to Holger. That, of course, they were going to win it, and they can win it, and they'd be expected to win it. So I think there's kind of being kind of too focused and kind of too determined to do something, and that inhibiting you. But I think the self-belief is the thing that makes me think that it's actually not inhibiting for Holger, in the same way that I think that at times you see the frustration boil over from Rublev, and you just see that he wants it too much, and it brings out sort of a side of his character that isn't really typical for him and doesn't get the best out of him. But I think there is this sort of bubbling under sort of belief that not everyone has.
That self-assured confidence, like a Yelena Ostapenko.
Oh, I'd love to get an Ostapenko reference in. But, you know, I think that she thinks on any given day she can beat anyone. I think it's the same with Holger. And so I think maybe that is a comparison I'll allow you to make. But I think right now it's definitely not a problem. I think if the results don't come, like same with Rublev, for example, that if he doesn't make the semi or final or a win at Grand Slam level or at Masters level, then I think it does start to take a toll on you mentally. But right now, he's 19, he's already won a Masters. And so I think his trajectory is quite different from kind of Rublev in that comparison.
Yes, absolutely. And a player on the kind of other, on the opposite end of the age kind of spectrum.
42 years old.
I know, right? And on the opposite team to Denmark, on the India side, and they were led by Rohan Bopanna, who got to the Australian Open mixed doubles final with Sanya Mirza. We also caught up with him before the tie, and here's what he had to say.
So you had a really quick turnaround from the Australian Open, going all the way to the finals, to then coming here to Denmark. When did you land, and what have you been up to?
Yeah, first of all, really happy to be in Denmark. It's been a long time since I've been to Denmark. I think 97 I'd come for a junior tournament. Right after the final, the following day, I took a flight. It took me about 30 hours to fly here to Denmark. That's and, I got here on Sunday, the 29th. So I think that entire 28th somewhere I missed out. But still, I think the toughest part was not only flying, but going from 30 degrees to 2 degrees. So that the body took a little bit of shock. And the second day, I think, is when the jet lag really hit me. And I went to sleep at like 8 p.m. and I woke up at 6 a.m. So that was
much needed
one of those days. But happy to be in Denmark, and anytime you get a chance to, I think, represent your country, it's always, I think, the first priority as an athlete. So I'm really happy to be back in the team and playing for India.
You say kind of going from different temperatures. How have you found being here in February? Were you here in February last time? Was it warmer when you were here last? Were you in the summer when you were here in 97, did you say?
Yeah, in 1997, yeah. I was in very much during the summer.
It's a bit different.
It was very, very different. And To be honest, my skin is not made for this kind of weather, so I'm just staying indoors as much as possible. The maximum I'm stepping out is from the tennis court to the hotel. That's about it. Otherwise, I'm happy just staying indoors.
Did you get any warning that it was going to be cold? Do you have winter jackets?
Actually, I knew it was going to be cold, but the plans changed since from Melbourne. I came straight here. I was supposed to go home to back in India, get my warm stuff and come here, but then I ended up coming straight here. So thankfully, we're playing indoors, so you know, totally fine, you know, with that.
Absolutely. You had a great result, reaching the final, obviously, in Australia with Sanya. A few words about the fact that she said it was 22 years since you first played together at a Grand Slam, and then 22 years later, you're in the final again in her last Grand Slam. How was that for you?
I think it's extremely, extremely special. I mean, especially we just have a handful of players coming from India, so to be still be able to represent a country and play at a big stage, play a Grand Slam final, and you know, Sanya has been such a great inspiration to so many people, not only just in tennis but across the country and the globe. And so I think I was really excited to play with her. And in December, she asked me when we were in Dubai whether I wanted to play mixed doubles with her. And I jumped on the opportunity. I said yes, absolutely. I would love to, you know, be a partner. Especially I knew she was going to be a last Grand Slam, and I think we were just enjoying and playing our tennis. And you know, playing together for so long, I think one of those close matches also, coming through that. And of course, it would have been a fair tale ending to, you know, win the title. But, you know, having said that, I think we're really happy that we got to, you know, play so many matches, and everyone back home in India got to watch that. And I think anytime I feel there's people watching or kids watching, that's when you can inspire someone. And I think, you know, I think that's the biggest thing for us. And, you know, I wish Sanya all the best for her, you know, rest of her career. I think she has a long career ahead in whatever she does. But I think it's really fantastic that I got an opportunity to play with her.
Yeah, it was great to see. And I think we all had our fingers crossed that you'd win that final. So, still, it's amazing to have made it to the final and have your last Grand Slam match be a final for her.
Yeah, absolutely.
I was going to ask, there's been great success in the doubles court for India. How far away do you think we are from an Indian singles Grand Slam finalist or even kind of winner?
I think right now with the big three playing, a lot of the countries are far away from
equally far.
Yeah, so I think no, but India, we don't really have a structure, to be honest. I think that just needs to be you know, we need to start a structure for having junior program, have tournaments there. And you know, then we can look at maybe having a chance of somebody representing, you know, in singles, and then maybe having a chance to win a Grand Slam title. I think we're still very, very long way from that. But you know, no, I mean, it is quite possible. It just needs a good direction and a good structure and a lot more tournaments in the country. I mean, I was reading this story about Ben Shelton, who made it to top 100, and first time he left the country, the US. So that's when I was reading about it, I was thinking that I wish India had so many tournaments that you could play and, you know, not even leave the country.
Yeah.
You
know, and be top 50.
Yeah, so here there's an opportunity for him to stay in the country and still able to do that. So, you know, the first thing is to have that kind of tournaments in the country and then see whether somebody from there can have a chance to, you know, play the Grand Slam level, and then after that, you know, try and win singles titles.
Thanks so much and good luck in
the
title.
Thank you.
So, Chris, I absolutely love with Bapana that he spoke about going from Melbourne, which was like 30 degrees, to Denmark, which I think he said was around like 2-3 degrees. I didn't realize it was that cold in Denmark at the moment.
It's really cold, and it got colder. And as I was walking, because it's just outside Copenhagen where we were, and as I was walking there, I thought, this must be really alien. Like, whether the players have been playing in India before or in Melbourne, this must be a real shock to the system, because I've been living here.
It's given me, like, visuals of like, the Jamaican bobsleigh team in Cool Runnings when they get to Calgary and they're just like, oh, I need to go to a shop and buy all the warm clothes that are in there possible.
Well, you got a feel for Bapana that he didn't get a chance to get his winter coat on his way over, so Denmark without a winter coat, I almost felt like I should bring one the next day for him. I've got a spare. But no, I think it was great hearing about some of the things like that when it comes to Davis Cup. Like, I'm sure there'll be some interesting cultural shocks when it comes to, and like weather shocks when it comes to someone from California being in Uzbekistan, for example. I think there will be some similar parallels maybe. But it was so nice sort of hearing about the Sarnia partnership and the fact that it was...
Yeah, to share that story is really nice, isn't it?
Yeah, an immediate yes, you know, and I think the chemistry on court is something that definitely, even though they might not be, you know, 22 years younger, they were still able to kind of challenge players that physically might be kind of nearer their prowess. So that was super nice. But I also loved the fact that when it came to when there might be an Indian singles finalist, that I think you can look at the finalists from other countries, and there haven't been many countries who've had a men's singles finalist recently because of the dominance of the big three. So I thought it was quite a good way of answering the question, because we're all a bit far from it this year if you look at who we're predicting to win all the Grand Slams.
I mean, does it surprise you though? Because, you know, you think about India in terms of just their population and how massive that is. Does it surprise you that they seem to have a legacy and a history, in particular with doubles, with players like Bapana? I grew up watching, you know, Mahesh Bhupathi and Max Murnyi on the doubles circuit. You've got Leander Paes as well. What is it about singles that I know they've had players in the past, you know, for example, Yuki Bambri's not a bad player, but what is it about singles? Is it just like it's just harder and it's more competitive than doubles? What do you think is it about singles that is a real stumbling block, I feel, for Indian tennis?
Well, Bapana talked about that there isn't the infrastructure there, and I think that is definitely one of the biggest issues there. The infrastructure and funding potentially, I think, could be the challenge there. I mean, Yuki Bambri, who played in this tie and did play very well in his singles against Holger, he's actually a former junior number one who won the 2009 Australian Open Junior Championship. So that's something that kind of is something you can forget, that there is that kind of junior talent, when I think it is potentially more on just your raw talent and your ability to play the game, before a lot more of the strength and conditioning, a lot more of the physicality and some of the experience you get from being more of a tennis nation, so to speak, comes through, unless you have kind of an exceptional individual setup or kind of a personal wealth situation, you know, for example, like the Pegula or someone like that, where, you know, you don't necessarily rely on funding. So I think it's probably down to that. But I mean, there's no reason why that can't happen. And based on the tennis that we saw, I think even though it might not be in the top echelons of tennis, there was some great tennis on display at the weekend.
Yeah, it was a great match. And actually, we're going to take a quick break now, but we're going to be back in the second half, where we're going to have part two of our interview with Holger Rune. We're also going to be chatting about the general tie as well. Also, Great Britain's victory against Colombia, plus all the other ties. So don't go anywhere.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome back to the Tennis Weekly podcast, sponsored by DownloadTennis.com. And now we're going to move on to talking about the performances and the results, Chris, that you watched in the Denmark tie. India slumped to a 3-1 defeat. From looking at it on, you know, from the report, it sounds like it was pretty much the Holger Rune show. And he certainly lived up to the billing, defeating Bambri in the singles on day one, 6-2, 6-2, then teaming up with Ingildsen to defeat Bapana and Bambri in the doubles, and then finishing the tie off, defeating Nagal in straight sets. Where for you did this tie rest on? Because I'm not going to lie, I was a little bit surprised. I guess Bapana and Bambri weren't maybe more competitive in that doubles match, given their prowesses, and I think the amount of familiarity they have with their games potentially versus the doubles pairing, which to me felt a little bit more of like a scratch pairing, given, you know, that came in because Nagal defeated Holmgren on day one.
Yeah, so I think you can read, and I felt the same. I thought that the tie that India was most likely to get was definitely the doubles. Maybe Bopana was still a bit chilly. Obviously, he didn't have a coat, so that could have been partly affecting it. But no, I think they've actually been doing a lot of work with Ingoldson, is what I learned from Freddie, that they've actually been preparing him because they knew that what they need is for Holger to win three in each of their ties, really, when it comes to the world group and when they're expected to peak in a couple of years. Yeah. So he's been prepped very much.
That's a tough ask, isn't it, for a player, I feel, of you know, of his quality that's going to be going deep in tour level tournaments, then be like, right, Holger, have that mentality that you're probably going to have to play, you know, three ties for our country in order for us to win.
Three times in 24 hours. The first match he played was at 4 p.m. and then he finished his singles before 4 p.m. the following day after playing the doubles earlier that day. So no matter how old you are, that is a lot of pressure on the body, especially because you'll be warming up, you'll be warming down, you're in press. There's a lot going on. I think it is really impressive being able to kind of keep that composure and kind of get it done. I think, obviously, if Holger played well, this was always going to be their tie. I was quite pleased, I have to admit, that Nagal did get that first tie on day one, because I did think that...
Yeah. Made it interesting.
Yeah, you want an interesting close tie. So I did have to kind of...
As the one neutral there,
I wasn't that neutral. but no, I think that was a key match. And I was really impressed with Nagal in terms of the questions that he posed to Holger. He got a lot of balls back. He was able to soak up a lot of that pace and actually, you know, put some pace on the ball himself. And he was really, really impressive. So we'll see him rise up the rankings, I'm sure. But we always talk about this, Joel, when it comes to Davis Cup and the Billie Jean King Cup. Player selections can sometimes be really quite odd, because I do think that with this one, I'm not sure I would have selected the players in the order that they played in this, because India actually didn't play their top player until the dead rubber. So that was something that surprised me, that they kind of went against the form book, and I think they tried to go a bit more to... upset and maybe surprise some of the players that might not be familiar with them. But yeah, I just thought that was a bit surprising that people wouldn't play their number one player until the dead rubber, especially when they've made the trip all the way to Denmark.
Yeah, it was pretty surprising, I think, for Gunaswaran not to play until the very end. So I don't know. I get that they might have tried to do some sort of strategy where Denmark may be thinking this is what the India team is going to be like, and they're going to do a switch to maybe kind of disrupt that. But yeah, it didn't really pay dividends ultimately in the end, and it was the Holger Rune show. And here is part two of his interview with Tennis Weekly.
I was going to ask, firstly, in terms of, it was the first time that you played, out there, what was the atmosphere like? Describe playing in front of the home crowd today.
It was an unbelievable feeling to have that many Danish fans in your back when you're playing. It's very special and something that we don't take for granted and something that we don't experience that often. So, unbelievable feeling, and this is why Davis Cup is so fun, when you can play in front of your country like that, and even on television, and a lot of people are watching, and just brings a lot of attention to Danish tennis, which is awesome.
Mm-hmm. Holger, you look pretty comfortable out there in the doubles. Do you have any kind of aspirations to play some more doubles this year? I think a lot of the top players, Garcia had a lot of success last year with it, and Kyrgios obviously last year in Australia. Is that something you're thinking about, or on occasion?
Sometimes. not really. I mean, I like to keep the focus on singles, but at the same time, I enjoy if the chemistry is good. I enjoy to play doubles a lot, and I think Joe and I, we had, you know, really good moment out there on the court. We supported each other, was backing each other up on the important moments, and you know, as I said, we played super aggressive. We took our chances and you know, went for it, and it was fun. And as Joe also said, to play in front of this home crowd with this energy is something that's very special. You know, even though I'm getting more used to playing in front of a lot of people, it's a different feeling playing in front of your own, and this was really cool.
Obviously, your captain is a
a bit of a doubles legend, having won Wimbledon. How important was that in terms of the healthy debut? Because you were playing against a more experienced sort of doubles pair.
Yeah.
Talk us through that.
Yeah, it was good. I mean, it feels, you know, great to have Fred on the bench, because, you know, he has this experience behind him, and he can give a few clues and a few tips here and there. And it's, you know, you feel comfortable because you know how well he did and how much experience he also brings into this. So it was cool. I mean, all in all, great atmosphere, great energy. So I'm super happy.
Now, what's interesting, I think, Chris, is you spoke to him about doubles, and we're going to get onto in a bit GB and Columbia and Dan Evans and the doubles question. What was your kind of impression of Holger Rune's take on doubles, given, you know, he's going to be a top singles player for years to come? Where do you think kind of doubles lives in his life?
So I actually did, when I asked him the question, because I thought, a lot of top players now, like Iga last season, the season before, she was playing quite a lot of doubles. It was also the case that Garcia and Kyrgios both won slams last year, and it kind of, we think, led to a springboard to their success. So seeing him play doubles, I was kind of blown away by some of the volleys he was making. It was, as we said, the Holger Rune show, but he would definitely be a top 10 doubles player if he was playing regularly in the tour. And I think seeing, you know, Bopan is ranked in the top 20, seeing someone like Holger play against him, and Holger is so talented in all areas of the court. So I did ask him the question. I was hoping he might say that he'd play a couple of matches with Tsitsipas every now and again, or maybe the odd doubles.
Yeah, I was just trying to think who he would play with.
Well, maybe we can see him doing a bit of doubles sort of in the grass court season, you know, get some court time in case you go out early in the singles. That might be a time we see it, but it's definitely not the plan. Which is a shame, because I think the more we get to see him play, the better. But I do understand that singles is such a physical game now that it doesn't necessarily make sense to put your body through that extra stress.
Is he just happy to live in the shadow of Freddie Nielsen, obviously a Wimbledon doubles Grand Slam champion? He's letting him still have his moment whilst he focuses on the singles.
I mean, it could be that. I think unfortunately for Freddie, and maybe even for kind of Wozniacki, both slam champions, but I think there is this expectation that Holger might be able to trump that. I mean, based on what we saw, it was the fairy tale match with a fairy tale result. And I think it just showed that if you're 19 and you're able to keep your composure in front of one of the biggest crowds he has played against, and they're all Danish, all supporting him, all of the commitments in media.
Yeah, that is big pressure.
It's a lot of pressure, and he delivered. And even when he wasn't playing his best tennis, he found a way to win. So I think Freddie might be safe on the doubles court, but I think in terms of the Grand Slam tally, you'd have to think that Holger might be coming for that record.
I mean, where does this, just finally on Rune, where do you think this leaves him, you know, for the rest of the season? Can he take much from this tie, or do you feel this was more kind of just a great, great opportunity for him to get in front of his home crowd? And where do you see Denmark potentially going from here in Davis Cup? Do you feel like they could become be in the Davis Cup group finals at some point? You know, they've made it through the playoff round. I think they're maybe two matches away from that moment. How far do you think they can go with this team and Holger Rune, and does it depend on if Holger Rune turns up or not?
Well, last year they did play against India away and they lost 4-0, and Holger Rune did not play. So I think that answers the question in terms of this is the Holger Rune team. But I think in terms of how important this is, I think it's really important to momentum. And I think in terms of having country support behind you, I think we've seen how much that helps players, you know, knowing that they are supported by their teams at home and their countrymen. I think it also provides really nice momentum. Obviously, he didn't need to play. He's not going to get much from these matches beyond kind of the experience of playing under kind of a great deal of pressure in front of a home crowd. He can work on a few things, but I think for him it's just another positive thing that's happening on what will be a very positive season. And I think I've predicted for him to win, what was it? I think I put him to win Roland Garros. I didn't ask him about that because I thought maybe it might be a bit presumptuous, but but no, I think it's a great stepping stone. And in terms of Danish tennis, I think the doubles pair really did impress me. I think Joe played great. And then I think Freddie's about to tell us that they played practicing, kind of training him up for that. We're going to play a bit of that in a second. But I think it is very much dependent on how the scheduling works out. But do I think that with Holger, they can get to the world group? Absolutely. And would I want to play Denmark this time later in the year? Well, this year and next year and the year after when they might be peaking? I don't think that any country would fancy two singles robbers against Holger in a doubles where he'll be featuring.
Yeah, I agree. And, we had an interview as well with the Denmark captain, Freddie Nielsen, and we're going to play you a bit of that now.
Freddie, how proud are you of the team today coming through and getting a win? Where do you think the match was won and lost?
So, most of all, I'm proud of the guys' application and attitude. We're very process-oriented in our team, and we don't celebrate wins or mourn losses as such. We celebrate how they're won and mourn how they're lost. And as always, I can't fault the boys for anything. They've applied themselves in an exemplary way all week, all practice, attitude, being there for each other, supporting, performing in the highest manner. You could see Holger coming in as a top 10 player today and playing an outstanding doubles, and maybe not reaching the level he's used to in singles, but still dug deep and did what he had to do to overcome an opponent who did very well on the day. And I think they're very very good representatives of Danish tennis, and that's what I'm most proud of, because this was the biggest competitive tennis occasion in Denmark in I don't know how many years, and we got to show a national team in front of, the match yesterday was played on the number one channel, like our equivalent of BBC One. And we can present a team of young, good guys who represent themselves well, who are well-mannered and represent the Danish flag and their families and our team really well. And that's what I'm very proud of.
And final question. When it came to the doubles, obviously they're less experienced than the Indian team they played today. What advice did you have before that? Kind of, was there anything from your doubles career that you were able to kind of impart in terms of advice on the court today?
Well, I'm a living example of the fact that there's not a long way to a big surprise in doubles. It's much more evenly matched in doubles. And you even saw now in Australian Open that a scratch team won as a wild card.
Yeah,
it is. And so you talk about experience. I'll take quality over experience any time of the week and twice on Sunday. And when you have a player like Holger, who's top 10, and I've seen him play doubles before, and I know he's very competent. I mean, his attributes are really good for doubles. He's a good server. His serve is quite well good for doubles because he's got a very good second serve. He's extremely good returns. And he's not shy at the net. So he doesn't hide as some singles players do. And he's a shot maker. He finds gaps in the opposition defensive organization. So I had a really good feeling that they were going to complement each other well. I know Joe has played a few doubles matches in Davis Cup and he's always performed well. And I thought they could be a good match. And they could have good energy. So we had a few things about them, but mostly we just focused on us and what we were going to do, because I know that if you have the momentum in doubles and you feel the vibe, it that's much more important than any little tactical thing here and there. It goes so quick, and you can also see that when they come out and get an early break in both sets, that pretty much set the tone. So I said it also before, it's also a little bit about not ruining the rhythm as much and letting it flow themselves, and they had we knew in a long time ago that this was probably our number one doubles constellation, and we've been prepping Johannes for a long time for this. Normally he's an outside player, so we took a long time to get him more comfortable in the deuce, and I actually think he looks more comfortable in the deuce and very competitive, and he stepped up and did well. So they know each other from before. They used to practice. They have a good chemistry. So there wasn't that much need to prep. And when you have Holger, who is top 10, I mean, nothing is impossible for, you don't have to convince him, hey, you can win this match. You know, he's looking at me, you know, if I said that to him, he'll look at me like I'm a, what are you talking about? We can win this match. Of course, we're going to win this match. So it's about cultivating that and trying to install that mentality to the rest of the team, because it's a great quality to have. Wish the favorite opponent for next time. They play Colombia. It's 1-1 after the first game.
That well.
No, and it's horrible conditions there. Massive altitude, play with pressureless balls. It's not tennis.
They're not happy with it. Yeah, so I think that might be play you.
So that's an opportunity. That, I mean, I like that. I like to play the tour. No. So we would like to play with some of the bigger nations. That's fun. I mean, we're in our mind, even though Holger is as good as he is now, we're not expected to peak for another few years. Mm-hmm. So any big experience we can have along the way, and I think we can beat any nation. I mean, when you have Holger playing like this.
From HBA to qualifier.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for coming.
So that was Freddie Nielsen, Denmark captain. I mean, he was obviously a great, you know, doubles player, you know, Wimbledon Grand Slam champion with Johnny Marais. Interesting, Chris, to hear him talk about, Great Britain. He wants to take on the rest of the world, it sounds like.
Yeah, and he wants to start with some big names, is what he said. So it's fighting talk from Freddie. And I think he was eyeing up.
I feel that's the attitude you got to have, right?
I was a Davis Cup captain.
If you're the challenger, Denmark are certainly in that challenger group, aren't they? To looking to upset the established nations, I think, in the tennis world.
Yeah, and especially if there aren't those sort of tournaments in Denmark, it's a great chance when you play against some of these big names. You know, when would the Danish number 485 in the world get a chance to play against, you know, a Dan Evans, a Cam Norrie, a Jack Draper? So it's those experiences that you can't necessarily get on the tour until you've really got your ranking up. So I understand why he's kind of shooting for the moon and trying to really kind of get that Danish team to play against some of the top names.
Well, we'll see how they will get on over the next few years. I guess it'll be really interesting to see how much and how dependent they are on Holger Rune. But great victory this weekend over India. It was also another great victory for Great Britain away in Colombia. Now this, Chris, to me screamed potential banana skin, because GB were going in as the favorites. I don't think Colombia's top singles player Daniel Galan was able to play, so GB came through 3-1. And I guess for me the main question here is Dan Evans, because he lost the opening singles tie. He's been given a bit of chat on how if he played doubles he'd be great at it, and he was thrust into that moment with Neil Skupski against Cabal and Farah, who are pretty handy, you know, doubles specialists, and they duly delivered 6-4, 6-4, and that really turned the tie into GB's favour when, yeah, on day one, both the singles matches were split.
Yeah, he was saving himself for the dubs, that's what I think. You know, he talked a lot of talk. He needed to get a little bit of extra help when it came to managing the pressureless balls, and I think having kind of a doubles expert such as Skupski really does help. And I reckon a pressureless ball being taken out of the air is easier than letting it bounce, so maybe that was the key to success, was a decent serve and then a volley. But but no, that seemed like a pivotal match in the tie. And to be honest, I'm quite pleased that Evans did get that doubles, because I do think we've been making poor selections when it's come to the doubles, and you've got to choose the right pair. It's got to be about the chemistry. And for example, if Joe Salisbury and Neil Skupski both prefer the same side of the doubles court, that's not a pair that I would recommend in that sense. And if Dan Evans and Skupski play well together, why would you not put them together again?
I mean, there could very well be potential of, who's to say we could not have like a Norrie Draper in the singles, and Evans comes in with Skupski as the doubles team potentially. I think what's great at the moment is that we've got potential different combinations to play with. I know Joe Salisbury has been having back issues recently, so it's great to have this strength in depth, and it's great to see them make their way through to the finals. Another team who did that were USA. I think they were actually the first to go through. Really easy victory. They went in as heavy favourites against Uzbekistan away. I was interested in this tie, Chris, and I think you were too, because Tommy Paul played it, and there was a lot of issues, I remember last time, with USA, and particularly their doubles. Rajiv Ram wasn't happy with, you know, the selections. What did you make of this tie? And first of all, the fact that Tommy Paul played, and also that actually Rajiv Ram finally got to play as part of the doubles pairing.
Yeah, I think it shows the depth of US tennis. You know, they didn't have the top players playing, but they had a really comfortable victory.
They had three rookies play for them.
Yeah, it's a good opportunity, I think. So especially when you're a nation that has that many players in the top 50, as we talked about, I mean, they could take their pick from any number to play this tie. So I think it's great to see kind of Tommy Paul coming out of the semi-final run at the Australian Open and then leading a team. I think it puts him in the perspective where he might have been in the shadows a little bit more. And this is...
You just think he was there, though, just for the Olympics?
I do think he was there for the Olympics. I also think, not trying to insult his intelligence, that he probably couldn't point to Uzbekistan on a map prior to going. I think most of them wouldn't be able to. They seemed a bit confused in some of the Instagram stories that I saw. But on the Rajiv Ram point, I think he obviously thought he should have been selected last time. I think he should have been selected. And, you know, he turned up, got the win. We'll see him at the finals. So
it's all you
exactly,
can do.
They're setting themselves up for a really competitive sort of finals. And there are some great teams that are qualified.
Yeah, I mean, we've got our 16 finalists now: Australia, Canada, Chile, Croatia, Czech Republic, Finland, France, Great Britain, Italy, Korea Republic, Netherlands, Serbia, Spain, Sweden, Switzerland, USA. We don't know where all those group stages ties will take place. We do know that they'll be across four venues in September. We think that one of the venues is going to be at home in Great Britain, but the venue has not been confirmed yet. I mean, just before we finish this episode, Chris, where would you like to see those four venues for these group stage matches be played, and also for the finals as well?
I think it would be fun to put in some curveballs.
I think they should go to Greece. I loved watching Tsitsipas in a basketball arena turned tennis court in front of, well, they had like 12,000-13,000 people there. It was fantastic to see.
It was fantastic to see. But I don't know, does it have to be played in one of the home countries?
Oh, does it?
Because I think that was a World Group 1 match. But I would love to see...
You're right.
Maybe a Korea Republic could be a good one. No, they do have some tournament there. I love an Italian tournament, you know. Where will the floor come from? Who knows? Finland, what a curveball. That could be good. But if I had to say who deserved it most, probably Croatia. They've had a lot of success. And I think it would be good to kind of have a big event there. Or just divide the whole world map. You know, you could do Korea, Australia, throw in a Canada, and then head to Chile, and then really cause a minefield for
just
scheduling.
Just give it all to GB. Yeah. Just put it all on my front doorstep in London. We'll have to wait and see where that happens. We still also don't know where the Billie Jean King Cup finals are going to be. I feel like we're always sort of waiting mid-season for these things to come in, but we'll have to wait and see how that develops. But I hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Tennis Weekly podcast. Remember to subscribe to us to stay up to date on all the action to come from the ATP and WTA tours. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and all major podcasting platforms out there. And if you like what you're hearing, then make sure to leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify.
You can also follow us on social media or email the show. We are on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Tennis Weekly Pod. Email the show at tennisweeklypod@gmail.com. Or check out our website, tennisweekly.co.uk.
And we are going to be back next Monday for our first proper tour catch-up post-Australian Open. It'll be me, Kim, and Chris at Tennis Weekly HQ. So I hope you can join us for that. But in the meantime, it's goodbye from Chris.
Goodbye.
And it's goodbye from me. We'll see you again soon.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.